This week on the show, it's been a while, so we're going around all four major Boston sports, plus a fifth maybe trying to emerge. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Welcome to the show. I am Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz, in case you forgot. It's been 2 weeks since we brought you an episode of the Calling It podcast, powered by CLNS. We had the World Series. That made things tough. Lebowitz went to a Wu-Tang Clan concert. I've been sick, which is why I have this incredibly sexy voice. But we wanted to make sure we got you one before the World Series was too old news. So here we are. Lebowitz, Wu-Tang Clan fan, apparently?
Of course. Are you not?
I mean, I don't necessarily know that I'll like, go see them live.
That's for the children, man. You gotta be for the children. Yeah, Wu-Tang Clan, they're a transcendent hip-hop group.
How old are they now?
I believe this is their 25th year reunion tour.
And yeah, I may have gone and seen them, like, you know, when they were actually a thing. I don't know if I'd go see a Wu-Tang Clan.
The amount of disrespect coming out of your mouth right now is a problem. All right.
Most reunion tours, though. Like, I don't get people who go see Skinner or who go see the Grateful Dead. Like, I don't get that.
I mean, the Grateful Dead would be unbelievable. Both of those concerts would be great if you had an opportunity.
You're not seeing Jerry Garcia. You're not seeing people go.
Seeing John Mayer. John Mayer and
the John Mayer thing is cool, but before John Mayer, Grateful Dead. I know people went to pre-John Mayer Grateful Dead.
Guess what? It's about, for those concerts, it's about the crowd and the Grateful Dead people. I know people who were deadheads back in the 70s, and let me tell you something. They got some stories. Wu-Tang Clan, forever good. You know, Grateful Dead's a transcendent group. I think they're overrated, but they're good. Wu-Tang Clan is a transcendent hip-hop group, one of the greatest to ever do it, and they will forever be one of the greatest to ever do it. You look at how many unbelievable rappers are in that group. GZA, Method Man, RZA, the late Old Dirty Bastard. All these guys were just so great, entertaining, and had awesome lyrics, amazing beats. So I couldn't pass up the opportunity. It was right down the street from me in Lowell, and it was well worth it.
How are they now? Obviously,
they're amazing.
They're still good. They still put on a good show.
Amazing. Like, right. Honestly, they did the entire 36 Chamber album, and it was impeccable. Like, I was thoroughly impressed with how great they sounded live. It was awesome. It was really good time.
All right. On to the Red Sox. They are your 2018 World Series champions. All right. First championship of the podcast, right?
Yeah. First
championship of us working together. I actually started this January 2016. Like a week, my first show was going into the AFC championship game the year the Patriots beat the Falcons.
27. Yeah.
So the third show I ever did, or 2017, you're right.
So 2017,
show,
yeah.
The third show we ever did was after the Patriots beat the Falcons in the Super Bowl, but I consider the podcast really starting when you joined. That was a long time ago. Snap Call was still involved. Boo. first real championship for the show, which is very cool. And just a very, very cool championship overall, just the way that went down. And we said it enough times on the show, we were both kind of waiting for the Red Sox to choke it away in the playoffs. And it just never happened. They didn't just win this. They steamrolled their way through three great, I think, you know, the second, third, and fourth best teams in baseball.
Yeah, they solidified a historic season, and I think you can finally say that they are one of, if not the best Red Sox team in the franchise's history. To go 108 wins in a regular season and then go 11-3 in the playoffs, I mean, there's no other way to look at it other than the fact that it is historic, and it was a team that you like to root for, that you want to root for, which is such a drastic contrast from what we saw during the John Farrell years. So I think the biggest takeaway from the season is just how big of a turnaround they had. And it all starts with a guy in Alex Cora, of course, and then JD Martinez joining the force.
Not an MVP candidate, though, apparently.
Not an MVP candidate for some strange reason.
Or, no, the reason is war, which is strange, but it's...
It was the dumbest thing in baseball statistics. But... It was an awesome season, and the fact that, you know, the flaws that they did have during the regular season, even though they were able to win games, and, you know, despite those flaws, they went away. They just simply went away. And, you know, you point to the World Series, that game in which Nathan Eovaldi pitched 7 innings in relief,
awesome,
where the Red Sox lost in 18 innings. That should have been it. 2-1 after that game. You still have two games left at Dodger Stadium. You figure you're going back to Boston down 3-2, given the momentum swing that should have taken place. Instead, the opposite happened. The Red Sox were the team that gained momentum from that because they saw a historic, and I keep using that word, but that's what we're dealing with, a historic outing from Nathan Eovaldi, who had one of the gutsiest postseason performances and postseasons in general that I've seen in my years of watching baseball. This team responded. They were tough. They had a lot of heart, a lot of fight, and it was awesome to watch them go on that run like they did.
I want to go back to something. That was, by the way, a beautiful soliloquy on the season. Well done.
Thank you.
I want to go back to something you said about the likability, though. And it was, I think some of the guys on this team, and there's one in particular, I think you know who I'm talking about. And we owe him a major apology. But I think they all kind of started to get the idea of what it meant to win a championship in Boston. And then they really started to embrace the pressure. I feel like the past 2 years, this team hid, ever since Ortiz left, this team hid from the pressure that was playing in Boston. I feel like at the end of the year this year, they embraced it, and specifically David Price. I mean, never did I think I would be chanting David Price's name, seeing him come off the mound in a World Series game, but he was outstanding. I think there is an argument to be made. I would have voted for Steve Pierce, just because it's so rare you see pitchers win MVP. But I think there was a legitimate case to be made. If there was a World Series Cy Young, absolutely. Maybe they should look into that. Absolutely, hands down, David Price. Now he opts in. He holds all the cards. He won a congressional race last night. There was a guy named David Price who won a congressional race. But just awesome stuff from everything we wanted to see from him for years. Everything, everybody, where are the balls? Where's the edge? Where's the intensity? He effing brought it. That was so cool to see. Like that was my, what I'm going to remember most from this playoff run is the 18 inning game, which of course the one game that they lose is the most memorable. I mean, the bars shut down. They kicked us out at 2:00. I still had time to walk back to my apartment and watch the game for an hour. But after that game, the thing I'm going to remember most is what David Price did. I'm not even going to remember the two bad starts he had at the beginning. I wasn't even going to bring those up, but what about for you? What was the most memorable part for you?
I think David Price getting the monkey off his back was huge. And for me, that comes down to how comfortable he is in Boston, which again goes back to how much unity there was amongst this team. I think for Price, he was just in a groove because he liked his teammates. He liked the team he was on, and he was supported. You can say what you want about him, the way he treats the media, what he did to Dennis Eckersley, to Evan Drellick, all these guys. But his teammates have always had his back and have always loved him. And I think the fact that they've embraced him and that he has found his niche in the locker room as a leader in a healthy fashion, I think that provided the success that we are, the tools for success that we saw. He clearly has the stuff. It's about location, and he was able to just pinpoint his pitches, and it was unbelievable to watch. I think another thing, and I kind of mentioned this a few minutes ago, the additions by Dave Dombrowski to bring in Steve Pierce and Nathan Eovaldi, two of the arguably the most valuable guys in that postseason.
Oh, yeah. They don't win it without either of those guys.
And back when Dombrowski made that move, he was getting a lot of flack. And I think rightfully so, given what we saw out of that bullpen. But, and I don't know if it was intentional, but it worked out perfectly. Steve Pierce winning the World Series MVP and Nathan Eovaldi being your most valuable pitcher, with maybe the exception of David Price, but someone who filled that void in the bullpen and filled that void in the starting rotation on top of that. I think it's just the well-rounded success of this team from Dave Dombrowski down to Alex Cora all the way through that roster. It was the perfect storm. We saw it in 2013 when this team caught lightning in a bottle. That wasn't the most talented roster. This one was an extremely talented roster. But in the past, they've had talented rosters with character flaws. They had the perfect surroundings to make sure that this team would succeed, given the personalities that they had. And it's going to be a roster that's going to live on forever. It was incredible to watch. You know, 07, somewhat forgettable. 2013, obviously, one for the ages. 04, for obvious reasons, is huge. This is going to be right up there. I mean, this was a huge year. And to see kind of the transformation over this season and really into the playoffs was so impressive on so many levels. It's really hard to pinpoint one thing that stood out.
But of course, this is Boston. We're never happy with just one title. My voice really went there. This is Boston. We're never happy with just one title. We move on. Look ahead to next year. Short off season. David Price has opted in. They picked up Chris Sale's option. What are we looking at this offseason? I think Kimbrel's gone. They're going to need, despite being the best closer in the history of baseball, apparently. Kimbrel's got a great agent. He's got like an Ari Gold-esque agent saying that. And I think Rick Porcello could be traded too. I think that you can bring back Nathan Eovaldi for less than you're paying Porcello right now. I think you'll get similar production. And at that point, I think moving Porcello maybe for a reliever, maybe replenish the farm system, maybe getting some long-term help at second base, which they're going to need. Those are my two things that I'm looking at this offseason is what happens with the closer situation. And I think Rick Porcello will be traded. The other thing I'll throw in, I think we can't count, and people are going to say, they have a second baseman, it's Dustin Pedroia. They don't. He's done. This is a David Wright situation. The guy is old. He has chronic injury problems. I think we, for the most, he may play games here or there, but I think we, for the most part, have seen the last of him in a Red Sox uniform.
Yeah, I think there are a few things. I think Nathan Eovaldi's contract, what is he going to get? I do think that the Red Sox are going to make a big effort to try to trade for him, or to try to re-sign him, rather, given what we saw. But it's tough to really know what his value is, because the best baseball he's ever played was in the postseason. So it's hard to really estimate someone's value given that fact. You don't know if it's going to carry over. You don't know if he can put it together for 162 games during the regular season next year. And we don't know if he could fill that void of Rick Porcello if they do end up trading him. I don't know if that's going to happen, though, because Rick Porcello, his contract is not very bad. He signed a deal that at the time people were you know, kind of questioning, but he's playing way over what he's getting paid. So I think you want to keep that guy, if anything, just because it is a team-friendly contract for the most part. Yeah, the closer situation, I don't know. I don't know what your other options are, and honestly, I don't know what the closer market is right now.
I mean, if in-house, it's Joe Kelly or maybe
Ryan Brazier.
You go closer by committee until June and then call up Durbin Feldman and hope that his development just kind of lines up in time with when you need him. I do think Durbin Feldman will be a key part of the bullpen next year.
Yeah, he could be. It's tough to guess with a guy with no MLB experience. Maybe he comes in and he just dominates from the start, much like Kimbrel did when he came up with Atlanta. But I don't know. I do like Kimbrel. The question is, how much is he going to ask, and are those concerns that you've had during the postseason going to carry over? Can he really be consistent, and can you count on him when, you know, he's going in for a save where his team's up for three runs, or if he has to go in for four outs? He's just not reliable in a multitude of situations. So, yeah, that worries me. I'm not sure how they're going to handle that. I'm not sure what the options really are for them. And second base is definitely a void that they need to fill. It's not Eduardo Nunez. It's not Ian Kinsler. It's not Brandon Phillips. And it doesn't seem like it's Dustin Pedroia.
Will they go 38-year-old Brandon Phillips come back, play 150 games this year?
No? Probably not. So, but I don't know the market for that. I think, if anything, they're probably just going to sign someone who's kind of an Ian Kinsler type, who somehow won a Gold Glove this year, by the way. So we'll see. I don't think that's going to be any big type of signing, though. That's going to be someone who's probably been on a handful of rosters in their career and is a good locker room presence.
All right, we've got three other sports to get to. Not much time. We'll rapid fire around the Boston sports scene next. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Welcome back to Callin' It. A two-segment show this week because we'll see if I'm still talking by the end of this segment, Lebowitz.
We'll see if I'm still awake.
I'm going to go back and listen to this and see how different my voice is from the beginning to the end. That's true. I mean, we're recording this Wednesday night. It's like 8:30. You're probably normally asleep by now, right?
I'm at least getting ready. I got my slippers, or I got my PJs on at this point for sure.
There you go. That's a great image for everybody at home. Slippers and his PJs curled up with a glass of hot cocoa by the fire, recording the episode.
Going Captain Commando.
Okay, I mean, now you're on that note. Patriots, Bruins, Celtics, all got a lot going on. We want to touch on it. If you listen to the show at all, you know Lebowitz and I like to ramble. So I'm going to call 2 minutes on the clock per sport. We will each go, and you'll hear this noise when the time is up, and that means that your take is over. We will start with the Patriots. They are 7-2, coming off an impressive win over the Green Bay Packers. After a slow start, it does seem things are back to business as normal. Lebowitz, they your favorite in the AFC right now?
Yeah, I think so. I just think given the experience that they have, you always have to go with the Patriots. I don't know if the Kansas City Chiefs will be able to topple them come January. I think the head-to-head matchup kind of shows us where both teams are at. That said, it's the Patriots in a season in which they're not really up to the standard they're usually at. And with Rob Gronkowski dealing with as many injuries as he is, you always have to be concerned there. And with the defense, you know, Trey Flowers stepping up, that's huge, but inconsistencies there as well. They're the favorites, but I'm not all that confident in their ability to kind of close it out this season, especially with that Kansas City Chiefs team. I'll give them the advantage there, but I feel no more confident than I usually do, I'll say.
I'm not too worried about the Chiefs. I don't even know if they get to the conference championship. I think they're just a young team. I will be worried in 2 or 3 years, but I think they're a young team. I think the lights could get too bright for them. I will say this, just kind of a separate point, that Josh Gordon trade's awesome. That's what's keeping him afloat right now. He's been outstanding off the injury report today for the first time, so now we can see he's fully healthy. And just a little prediction for this week. Everybody's talking about the Malcolm Butler revenge game. I think this is just as much the Bill Belichick revenge game, and I think they're going to unleash Josh Gordon on Malcolm Butler. I am talking 10 catches, 200 yards, couple of scores. Butler has not been good this year. He's not playing with confidence at all. Mike Vrabel was asked about it today, and he very much dodged the question. Belichick dodged the question when asked about what he's seen in Butler this year. It's been different. PFF has him as the worst corner in football. He knows the noise about people criticizing him for not re-signing Malcolm Butler, and obviously everything that happened in the Super Bowl. I think that Bill Belichick makes a point of attacking Malcolm Butler this week. Let's move over to the Bruins. And the most interesting thing going on with the Bruins right now, they got a lot of injuries. They're off to a slowish start. But has Tuukka Rask finally lost his throne? I don't think Yaroslav Halak is officially the number one goaltender yet, but they're splitting the reps about 50-50. And, I mean, anytime you talk about Tuukka Rask in this town, you know it's going to be nuts.
Yeah, I don't think he's played, you know, badly enough to justify him losing that starting role, given the history he has in Boston. He's been inconsistent, but he hasn't been all that bad. He's had some good outings, some good starts, others in which he have been lackluster. And really, the biggest detriment to him is the fact that Yaroslav Halak is playing out of his mind right now. Someone who is a starting caliber goalie, but not really the reputation of Tuukka Rask. So for him, I think it's just a matter of how long Halak is going to stay hot. And if this continues on, obviously Tuukka is going to lose that spot. But we saw this last year with Khudobin. Maybe he responds. Maybe Rask responds to the backup playing, you know, exceptional hockey. He's done it before. He could do it again, and it's still early on in the season.
I don't know. We talked to Jake Asman about this back in June on the show that Halak's a guy that will play out of his mind for a month and then suck for a month. And I think, at least for now, you got to milk Halak while he's hot, and then when he's not, you go back to Rask. But it's an interesting situation because they may have been, at least in the regular season, the best team in the Eastern Conference last year, and then everybody who was close to them got better, and they made no moves. They're counting on the young guys either picking up a step, like Donato, who's now been sent back to Providence, or the new young guys who are rookies, like Juho Vaakanainen, who's hurt. And I just think, once again, the Bruins made some very questionable roster decisions, and every risk they took is coming back to bite them, and that's kind of been the theme for them the past couple of years. All right, finishing off with the Celtics. They are 6-4. It's a game tomorrow night. Again, recording this on Wednesday, off on a West Coast road trip. They've played, I don't want to say they played tough competition, but it hasn't been easy. Now you hear Terry Rozier wants a trade. Jason Tatum looks like he's totally changed his game. It's not for the best. He's just taking a bunch of long twos. Are you worried about the Celtics yet?
No, not yet. I think they're going to pick it up, and they'll be fine. This seems too well coached and has too much talent that's entering their prime, not even in their prime, not even really close to their prime, a lot of them, to really for me to think that this is going to last that much longer. It's the regular season. You're trying to fine-tune some things, and with LeBron James out of the Eastern Conference, I think that gives them some breathing room. I think, you know, by February, they're going to solidify themselves as the top team in the East, and we'll see them playing at a completely different level. Kyrie Irving still needs to step up into his true form, although the past few games he has. Tatum, I agree, he hasn't looked the same, although he's shown flashes of being that elite scorer we know him to be. And Gordon Hayward still is definitely not where he used to be. And I think that he'll get back to his old form as well once he gets some more reps. So not all that worried. I think they'll definitely pick it up. And with Brad Stevens at the helm, it's hard to – and all these returners, it's hard to think that that won't happen.
Yeah, I'm not too worried yet. I will say after they get back from this after they get back from this West Coast road trip, they have a very easy schedule outside of one Toronto game. And if they're still playing 500 ball after that, I'll be worried. Then I'll be worried. Right now, I think they're okay, but I will say in terms of Terry Rozier, I think they should move him. One, trade him while he still has value. And two, I think it might wake that locker room up. Like, I know we've got this cool, like, hip, close-knit group, and y'all like playing with each other and all of that, but I think it says that everybody's replaceable, which is the message they kind of need right now. All right. So you're all caught up on Boston sports. There is one more notable thing going on in Boston this weekend that I'd be remiss if we didn't touch on. And that is that Boston, New England, rather, suddenly cares about college football. Or do that. College football is relevant here. And the main point of that being College Game Day is coming to BC on Saturday for Clemson, Boston College. Boston College ranks 17th. Clemson's ranked 2nd. I don't really know why Game Day is doing this. There's no good games this week. I get that. There's only two games with ranked opponents, and they were just in Alabama, so they're not going to go back. But, I mean, Boston College, they'd be better off doing one of those niche games where they do like Harvard-Yale. Go to Cortica for all the Ithaca grads that are listening. Cortica's this weekend. The last true Cortica before they ruin it and move it to New York. But I don't know what they're getting into, right? Like, they're going to be looking for the overhead shot Game Day is of like, all the hot, you know, attractive women just hanging out, their shirts tied up, their faces painted, and all they're going to get is my dad and his friends yelling about the Red Sox in the parking lot. Like,
well, okay, you got
college fans are Boston College doesn't get new fans. It's the people who watched when Doug Flutie played there. Nobody has joined the BC bandwagon since Doug Flutie left. It's going to be a cold, rainy day. Nobody's going to go out. The team's going to get blown out of the building. It is so not a Game Day atmosphere. It's so not a college football atmosphere.
Show some respect for Matt Ryan and even Andre Williams. Come on.
I when that was happening. Do you remember, and I know we were like younger, but do you remember like freaking out about the BC football team then when they were ranked 2nd in the nation? I didn't know until years later.
Well, no. I knew, but that's because I had a teacher who was a BC alum, and which kind of goes back to your point that their fan base is all older people. Another thing is, there are plenty of attractive girls at BC, so that's not going
to
be a problem.
They're not going to stand out in the rain at 8 in the morning.
Oh, they will.
All day behind. No, they're not.
Yeah, this is the thing.
BC students don't go to BC football games. They don't.
But that's because they don't have tailgating. What this does is this gives these students an opportunity to tailgate, to drink, to do all that fun stuff before the game. We're watching Lee Corso put on the what the hell is that? The Eagle mask.
If Corso picks BC,
he's not gonna do that.
Like, come on, BC. They're gonna. You're telling me AJ Dillon is gonna save them when he's facing offensive line. They're not playing Holy Cross. They're not playing UMass.
Playing Clemson. You don't think Clemson's gonna bring in some fans? It's gonna be packed at Alumni Stadium. Cool.
So BC is going to get even more embarrassed. They're going to be panning over. First of all, Boston College Game Day is coming to Newton, Massachusetts, which is an absolute
Chestnut Hill.
That's a joke in itself. That College Game Day, Lee Corso, Kirk Herbstreit are coming to Newton, Massachusetts.
It's Chestnut Hill. It's not Newton.
Over. this whole empty, raining parking lot, and all you're going to see is a couple of Clemson fans. Like, come on. What an absolute joke that New England suddenly cares about college football because BC's ranked 14th in the nation. A.J. Dillon's not saving BC on Saturday. They're going to get blown out of the building. It's going to be an utter and complete embarrassment.
Well, the argument against them doing this isn't where BC's ranked or how that game's going to end up. It's the fact that Boston College is brutal with being fan friendly.
Exactly.
There's no tailgating. There's nothing. So if you want to come in and go to a game, which I did about a month ago, you got to just take the train in and then go to the game. There's none of the fun stuff that comes with college football. It's not the event of college football. And the atmosphere when I went, it was against Temple, so it's not as big of a deal. But it wasn't great. BC is just not a football school. That's the reason. That said, you're going up against the number 2 team in the country. It's going to be loud. It's going to be a good atmosphere, especially when you bring college game day, because that makes it a destination on top of whatever the matchup is. I don't think it's going to disappoint. And I think the problem with BC football is way beyond game day going there, college game day going there. They need to do something about being tailgate friendly and fan friendly from here on out.
And then just to tag on to that, with this new New England obsession with college football, UMass and BYU are playing at Gillette. They got all the UMass bannering up when I was down there today. So is another route for you.
There, jeez, a bunch of Samoan dudes just beating the crap out of this dude from Longmeadow, who is a 5'10", 185 running back.
New England college football is going to get embarrassing. I don't know who UNH is playing. I don't know who Maine's playing. Let me look this up real quick. Hang on. Give a take while I look this up. Also, we were not doing the 2-minute timer for this second. So
No. This one's going beyond. Yeah, I don't think. I don't know. UMass. The
UNH football's good. I'll give them that. They have Albany this weekend. They should win that game.
Okay, but UMass playing at Gillette Stadium, I think, is the biggest travesty of all of this.
Yes, and I like if they want to do it once a year, fine, whatever. Maine plays Richmond. I think Richmond's pretty good. Although Maine is in first place in the CAA, so there you go.
Oh wow!
Big game for the Black Bears this week. Game day should have gone there. Should have gone to Orno, right?
Yeah.
Or no, it's in Richmond. Should have gone to Richmond. Hey, Richmond cares. Richmond would give you a much better scene than Boston College would. 100%.
Of course. Richmond's a great college town. It's much more student-friendly than BC. BC's brutal. By the way, BC is in Chestnut Hill. It's not in Newton. It's Chestnut Hill. There's a difference.
It's not Boston.
It's what's that lake, that little pond right next to it? I forget what they call it. You can see the Pru. You can see the Hancock building. It's a nice little view. You're right down the road.
You can see those buildings from Route 1 in Walpole driving over the hill.
You can see it in Burlington on 95, on 128 right, as well.
You can see those buildings from Building 19 and a half.
That's true. But it's
the name of the restaurant down there. If you eat like a 2-pound burger, your meal's free.
Oh, Eagle.
No, not Eagle. Oh, man, what's it called? I used to love that place. Oh, this is going to kill me. Hang on. Before we wrap up.
two-pound burger, free food, Boston.
Before, like, I could – Clyde's.
Clyde's, okay.
Clyde's.
Yeah.
Right now, you could see the buildings from Clyde's in Walpole. That might actually technically be Sharon, but
– BC is a beautiful school. I mean, amazing academically, as we know.
Yeah.
Beautiful campus. Have you ever walked around the neighborhood around alumni? I walked there to get to the Chestnut Hill T stop.
Fantastic spot.
They're billion-dollar houses. With a B. It's amazing.
I mean, incredible. Brady lives right there. Brady and Kraft both live right there.
Is it right near the stadium? They live near the club. They live near the country club.
I think I know where they live. I'm trying to pick because I've never really driven from one spot to the other. I think you could walk it. Brady could walk it. I think Kraft might be a little bit further.
Oh, I thought that was an age thing.
Well, Kraft's house might be a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I got you.
On that note, my voice is about to go. I keep having to mute my mic. So I'm going to call it. You want to do the close for me here?
All right. I forget how you do. I know you go bye at the end and then you click stop. All right. That's it for Call It. We'll be back next week, hopefully, if we can find a time that works for both of us. But that'll do it. Thanks for tuning in.
Social.
Oh, yeah. Follow us. Calling It at Calling It Pod on Twitter. Subscribe on iTunes.
Podcast, come on.
Calling It Podcast. Whoa. It's not pod. All right, no. Calling It Pod will bring up Calling It Podcast. That's when you follow. At Alex underscore Lovewitz, at Real Alex Barth. Did I get that right?
You did. Yeah, you got one.
All right. All right. This has been Calling It. Thanks for tuning in. Bye.
Bye.